on March 12, 2020, governing protocol for teleconference meetings. Certain board members may be calling in to this meeting by telephone. Any member of the public can observe and participate in this meeting by attending the meeting at 2270 Trumbull Road, Paris, California, 92570. Any member of the public wishing to make any comments to the board may do so in person and by using the following call-in number, 800-246-2839, access code 993-234-677. All votes taken during today's meeting will be conducted by an oral roll call vote. At this time, I'd like to ask Director Corona to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. With that, we'll call the meeting to order today, this being March 18th, 2020, time being a little after 9 a.m. Roxanne, do we have guests this morning?
No, we do not.
Okay. With that, this is a time and place within the jurisdiction of EMWD. Speakers are required to limit any comments to 3 minutes, and could have to be something that's not on today's board agenda, and seeing no cards or anybody raising their hands. We'll go to the first public hearing. First public hearing is to adopt 3 proposed resolutions and an ordinance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District in connection with the establishment of Community Facilities District number 219-83, the Winchester Ridge. At this time and place is set duly noticed public hearing regarding the proposed establishment of Community Facilities District, CFD, number 29-83, Winchester Ridge, of Eastern Municipal Water District, the proposed rate and method of apportionment, and authorizing the CFD to include bonded indebtedness. I declare this public hearing open and would ask for a staff report on the proposed action.
January 22, 2020, the Board adopted Resolution 2020-005 declaring its intention to establish CFD number 2019-83, Winchester Ridge, and Resolution 2020-006 declaring its intention for the CFD to incur bonded indebtedness not to exceed $10.5 million. EMWD has received a signed petition by the landowner within the CFD, Forestar USA Real Estate Group Incorporated, to form the CFD in order to finance applicable EMWD water and sewer facility costs in lieu of fees. The project is planned for 376 lots and is located in the Winchester area of unincorporated Riverside County, north of Holland Road, south of Dominigoni Parkway, east of Briggs Road, and west of Leon Road. CFD number 2019-83 will be formed in compliance with EMWD's comprehensive debt policy, meeting or exceeding all requirements. Annual special taxes within the CFD will range from $1,415 to $1,940 for a single-family property, with an average effective tax rate 2% or less at the time of bond sale. Special taxes may be levied at their assigned rate as soon as the parcel is considered developed. The Board has received and reviewed a Community Facilities District report for the CFD prepared by Webb Municipal Finance, LLC, which is hereby entered into the record of this public hearing.
I would ask the Secretary of the Board how this hearing was noticed.
Notice of the public hearing was published on March 10, 2020 in the Press Enterprise, a newspaper circulated within the CFD boundary in accordance with the Mellow Roof Community Facilities Act of 1982.
Okay. Has the Secretary of the Board have received any written protest to the proposal? I would ask her to provide copies there to the Board.
No written protest to the proposal have been received.
Okay. Thank you. At this time, are there any members of the public who wish to speak on this matter? If so, please come forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record, and hearing none. At this time, we're ready to adopt the following resolutions. Resolution establishing CFD number 2019-83, Winchester Ridge of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of special taxes and calling the election therein, and the resolution determining the necessity to incur bonded indebtedness within CFD number 2019-83, Winchester Ridge, and calling an election therein. I will accept a motion and a second to adopt these resolutions.
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Okay. Okay. With that.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauling?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Okay. The record show that it's 4-0 with director record absent. The resolutions we have just adopted form CFD number 2019-83, authorize a special tax and call for a bond election within CFD number 2019-83, which is to be held at the time by the secretary.
All ballots have been cast in connection with the election for Community Facilities District number 2019-83, Winchester Ridge of Eastern Municipal Water District, and the election has now been closed. The results of said election, which includes the number of votes cast for and against Proposition A, B, and C, was unanimous in favor of all propositions.
Having heard the statement of the Secretary certifying the results of the voting on the propositions, I will entertain a motion to adopt the following resolution. Resolution is certifying the results of the March 18, 2020 special tax and bond elections within CFD number 2019-83, the Winchester Ridge of Eastern Municipal Water District. Okay, I have a motion and a second, please.
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, roll call, please.
Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson? Director Slauson, can you repeat your vote?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. It is 4-0 with director record absent. The reading of proposed ordinance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting as in its capacity as a legislative body of Community Facilities District number 2019-83, Winchester Ridge of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing a levy of a special tax within the district, may be waived since everyone present has a copy of the proposed ordinance or may obtain a copy from the district's website. Oh, I'm sorry. That's your reading. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I believe your passage is prior before that.
Oh, yes. The resolution was passed, and I will now ask the district's legal counsel if there is a necessity for the secretary to read the proposed ordinance to be voted upon in connection with these proceedings with respect to authorizing the levy of a special tax within CFD number 2019-83.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The reading of the proposed ordinance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting in its capacity as the legislative body of Community Facilities District number 2019-83, Winchester Ridge of Eastern Municipal Water District, authorizing the levy of a special tax within the district, may be waived since everyone present has a copy of the proposed ordinance or may obtain a copy of the district's website.
Okay, I will accept a motion and a second to waive a reading of the proposed ordinance and adopt the ordinance.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauling?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Okay. Vote passes 4-0 with director record absent. The ordinance has passed. We will now go to the next item on the agenda. Okay. With that, we'll go to public hearing.
Oh, we did that.
Executive reports. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Sullivan. Good morning and welcome to the Surreal. I don't have a written report today. We've been fairly busy in the last 48 hours on attending to a number of things that are fairly obvious, but I do want to update you on a couple of activities we've undertaken here relative to responding to the COVID-19-related issues. I think first, one of the things we've been working very closely with our executive management staff and our leadership staff to really emphasize we need to be calm, we need to be factual, we need to be supportive, and we need to provide good leadership to our staff at this time. I think we all realize that the fear of this is grossly disproportionate to the actual health risks that we're seeing right now. It doesn't mean that we want to minimize the potential impacts of this. We need to keep perspective, and we also need to obviously continue to practice the precautions, the social distancing, and all the practices that we've been communicating with the board and staff over the last few days. And more importantly, just not to panic. I mean, this is not that bad of a situation. We have made some changes here to ensure that we can continue to provide our level of service, but are kind of respectful of what's going on and what we're seeing both state and locally at the county level. We have actually closed the headquarters lobbies here to direct public access for district business. So we're asking consultants to essentially contact staff and our staff to work with the consultants via teleconferencing and other means. We're also informing our customers via signage and then also on the internet that if they need assistance with billing or any customer service matters, there's a number of ways that they can contact the district. We have also put in place some additional precautions with respect to staff. Staff that are returning from out of the country travel are being placed on kind of 2 weeks administrative leave prior to returning to work. What we have seen, however, is we only have six staff members who have traveled out of the country recently. Five of them, one of them has already come back to work because they've been off for that period of time. And the intent is just this would only apply to travel for areas that are infected. So we have put that place in place as well. On a going forward basis, what we are going to do starting tomorrow is we are putting those employees who are not operations critical on paid work-at-home status. So in other words, this is not putting people on leave or anything like that. What we are doing is those who can work at home, we are shifting to a work-at-home status. That will start Thursday the 18th and continue tentatively through Monday the 6th of April when those will return to work. So I just want to be real clear on what this paid work-at-home status is. First, employees would be required to take home work or work online. So it's normal work that they would be doing. We have email access for all employees. Those employees who use some of our advanced programming capabilities or need secure access, we do have VPN access for those employees in place already and with a few additions. And so employees are going to be required to do their regular work assignments. They need to participate by meetings. In meetings, we're going to be setting up those meetings teleconferencing. Also, as you know, we have a pretty enhanced safety program around here. A big part of what we do is online safety training. We're encouraging employees to do that. They're to stay in regular communications with their supervisors regarding the status of their work and possible future assignments. They have to be available during work hours by phone or email. And so they can be in contact with their supervisors during normal work hours. Also, we may need to bring employees in. And even the employees who are on home work assignment may need to be brought in. So during work hours, they're required to be able to be in the district offices if they are on call within 1 hour or their normal commuting time. And also, we are not absolutely restricting employees from coming in. Employees can come in, they can drop off work, pick up work, meet with their fellow staff members if necessary, but this would be a limited number of hours. So I want to be very clear, we are not putting employees on vacation, and we are doing everything we can to maintain the very high level of productivity that we have in the district. So we will be communicating this with employees this afternoon, putting this in place tomorrow. So that's where we are on that change. A couple of other things to follow up on, the board and committee meetings. You can see how we're conducting the board meeting today, allowing telephonic options. We have social distancing in the room implemented here. For committee meetings, we're going to continue to hold the committee meetings at 217. If public want to participate in the committee meetings, they will be able to do so by coming into this room, and we'll have a telephone set up, and then the board members and committee members and staff will be in 217 for the committee meetings. So we'll continue to have our board meetings and committee meetings as normal. It'll just be a little bit different on where people will be located for those activities. Finally, another matter, Metropolitan Water District declared a state of emergency yesterday regarding coronavirus. We have been in contact by the County of Riverside saying that we might want to consider that. I am very opposed to that right now because I think a state of emergency is really more related to our ability to provide our services. There is no issue with us providing our services in any way, shape, and form. And in fact, I think it would send the absolute wrong message to the customers and the public if their water district is declaring a state of emergency. So we have communicated back to the county that we will not be doing that. And I'm a bit disappointed that Metropolitan would do that without thinking of the implications to its member agencies. So we will not be doing that. Our operations are fine. And it was explained, well, you can declare a state of emergency because then you can have access to FEMA funding. Well, we don't have any infrastructure that's being destroyed or from a natural disaster or otherwise, so we really don't see that need, and we will not be declaring an emergency. And I just wanted to have the board clear on what our reasoning for doing that was. So that, with that, I laid kind of a lot out. I just want to answer any questions or any suggestions that the board members may have.
No, I agree with your recommendations. You know, for us, I think it just sends a wrong message. I mean, we're able to provide all the services that are necessary to our constituents. And at this point, I don't think we need, unless we have an earthquake or something during this transition. You know, hopefully that doesn't happen. But, you know, for an advanced flu, I don't think that we need to do that.
First of all, I just want to say I could not think of a better management team to run this district during this, as you said, surreal time. So thank you guys for all you do. My only concerns is, as Paul just said, I want to continue to push out on social media. We are operating as normal. I am still a little baffled at the hoarding of bottled water throughout our society when we are providing reliable, good, clean water. So I just want to make sure that we're continuing to push those messages out. I could not agree more on the state of emergency. It sends a horrible message. The other thing I just want to monitor, as I at least in my lifetime, I've never seen us shut an economy down in 72 hours. I think it's going to affect a lot of our customers here as far as paying their bill. I do believe the governor said something yesterday or the other day about paying utility bills. So at some point, I'd like to get some sort of report on where we're at on that. I know Charles has a lot of cash in the bank. I don't think we're in any kind of distress, but I want to come up with what messaging do we have to our customers along those lines.
So. Sure. I think we certainly anticipate that we will see non-payment, late payment. One of the things East Bay Mud advertised on their website is they are not going to be doing shutoffs. I don't think we want to advertise that on our website. For all practical purposes, because of the requirements of SB 998, we are still in a non-shutoff period. And so we will continue with that non-shutoff policy at this time. And also, you know, one of the things we do is work very well with customers on payment plans and things like that. And so we will continue to push those practices as hard as we can. But I think, unfortunately, the economic dislocation from this is going to affect those customers who are the lower wage earners, who are working at restaurants and are bartenders like my son, and things like that, who are now unemployed bartenders. They will not be able to pay their bills, and so we may see some of that. But overall, and Charles will review this today in his report, because we do have a report today. I'm looking for what you shared with Brent. And our economic condition and our cash position is very, very strong right now. So I appreciate you bringing that up.
And then finally, because I noticed when I left today, I had two kids at my house that should be in school. I'm glad that we have a program here, because I think we have a lot of employees that are facing situations where it's abnormal. They have to take care of child care. So I see Laura nodding her head back there. But I just appreciate the fact that we are doing these things to have some work-at-home opportunities. And I know with our technology staff, we're going to be able to execute that. So, again, I just want to say kudos to the entire management team here for how we're rolling out a very unusual situation.
I agree with you completely. I think state of emergency would just be a totally bad message, especially for a water district. And you know, there was that article in the paper today about coronavirus and water and potentially in sewage and stuff like that. And I think, you know, a lot of bad information could possibly get out, and I think you're right. I think it needs to be business as usual to the most extent possible, and we need the public to be confident in what we're doing over here. So I agree completely.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I think it's not only, and I like that suggestion of not only messaging, and as Phil follows us on social media very closely, he seems it's all been about the water quality, but I think we should also say we're still providing full services. I think that's very important. And so I think those are really good suggestions, and we'll incorporate that into the outreach. And one of the things we're very hesitant is to start putting big, you know, frontline banners on the website saying, you know, the water's okay. Because if when this first started, there was not this relationship in the media between water quality and coronavirus. Nobody was making that. But that's now sneaking in because the media is talking about everything they possibly can to get hits on their websites or have people tune in. And so there are certain things that are just not true. So we have done more proactive communication in that regard.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on Phil's comments about the staff that we have here, which is excellent. But I also want to commend the general manager on his communication and outreach and transparency, not only to the board, but also to emails to all the employees. I think, you know, that's exemplary, and it just shows the leadership that I think goes down to each individual AGM and director and supervisor. So
Absolutely.
Congratulations. Thank you.
Director Slauson, do you have any thoughts you'd like to share with us?
No, I certainly agree. It seems to me that declaring a state of emergency not only implies, but I would say equates to us indicating there's some core task that we cannot, you know, complete. So, you know, if that's not the case, then no, it sends the wrong message.
Right.
So I agree with your action.
Thank you.
This is evolving, as we say, although it seems like it's evolving, but it's kind of going into a mode of, you know, people are staying home for the next 2 weeks, and it seems like it's going to be interesting, because I think that's just going to throw along in 2 weeks before there's major, major changes. You know, one of the things that's also been challenging is the state leadership has been constantly changing in terms of their messaging. The governors, you know, held two press conferences yesterday, and so that's not making it easy, I think, for many of the counties in particular, and the cities. I think they're trying to adjust to that. But we will continue to monitor the situation, of course, keeping communications open with the board. So that concludes my report for today.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Laura.
Nothing to say.
Nick.
I'd like to provide you an update on Fallbrook's Public Utility District and Rainbow Municipal Ward District's process to detach from the San Diego County Water Authority and annex into Eastern. So as you know, for, gosh, probably a year or more now, we've been working very closely with those two agencies, collaborating with them on information and materials that they need from us as part of their application to LAPCO, which included a very detailed analysis of our water supply and system reliability, which is something that the LAPCO Commission is going to very closely look at. That's all been packaged, and it's with those two agencies, and I've been informed that they do intend, by close of business today, to submit their applications to LAPCO. So I reached out to the general managers to confirm that that was the case. They do intend on doing that. They may have to do that electronically because they're being told that the LAPCO offices are closed because of the coronavirus, but they are going to get their applications formally in at the close of business today. And they do intend tomorrow to go out with a press release. They're going to keep it fairly local to Fallbrook Village News, maybe the San Diego Union Tribune, but they want to go out with a press release to, again, reiterate what they're doing, why they're doing. And they reached out to us and asked if they could include a quote as a part of their press release, and we have provided them a quote from our general manager, Paul Jones, and I wanted to share that with you. And I said this is still to be finalized, but this is what we provided them. The Eastern Municipal Water District, which serves a population of more than 825,000 in Riverside County, welcomes the opportunity to serve Fallbrook PUD and Rainbow Municipal Water District. EMWD is a longtime leader in providing a cost-effective, reliable water supply and is committed to working with any agency that seeks to provide mutually beneficial service to the community. We welcome the request from both Fallbrook Public Utilities District and Rainbow Municipal Water District to consider annexation into Eastern Service Area. And as part of the request, determine that we have the resources to serve them as wholesale water customers without any impacts or cost to our existing customers. So I anticipate that that statement will be included in their press release. So with that, LAPCO will receive the applications. We fully anticipate that this is going to be a many, many month process as LAPCO looks at this. Fully understand and anticipate that the San Diego County Water Authority will be throwing up many, many challenges to their process, and we'll continue to support them as necessary. Then as things evolve, I'll continue to update you as far as where they're at.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Anyway, Joe.
Good morning, sir. A couple of items. Last week, we went out to Willie County Riverside and Rancho Water District to discuss development activity in Water Country. We have these meetings on a corporate basis. In addition to that, we met with the county's consultant. They have hired that we retained a financial consultant firm, David Possum Associates, to look at infrastructure needs within Water Country and potential financing mechanisms that the county may want to consider, such as enhanced infrastructure from the industry. So we did meet with financial consultants. We shared with them what we have completed in terms of infrastructure investments in northern Water Country, as well as the special benefits that the area has been established. We also shared with them we have an ongoing study that looks at the southern. They ultimately plan to move this forward with the county EDA and have a public meeting sometime in June, which we will participate in. Related to that, we anticipate a substantial completion of our South Point Country study and moving forward our findings to the county EDA sometime in June. On a separate matter, we have had a number of meetings with State Water District Control Board to develop the terms and conditions for funding for the North Paris Groundwater Program. And as part of those discussions, they did ask for a number of additional elements to be added to the program, additional monitoring development, additional groundwater modeling. So in response to their request, we this week submitted a revised grant funding request. We'll get after an increase of the state grant funds from the initial $36 million up to just shy of $45 million. So that was submitted this week, and we hope to get back in the next.
And the state has the authority to increase the grant up to $50 million.
Good. Okay. All right. Jeff.
Good morning. Just real briefly, we had a big storm last Thursday. That was an unexpected portion of not even for it, I guess. Dave Brown and Matt Blenders did a great job staying on top of all the issues that they come up with our system, ensuring viability. It's minor erosion damage yet. Grant Street, which is probably the most physical thing that happened. Nothing of the magnitude that we saw a year ago. So I just want to comment to Dave and ask him here for the work that they did.
But our issues were concentrated. You might want to talk about the specific issues we have, if you could, please.
Yes. So at one of our lift stations, there was a very low flight storm that got very close toward the spill level, but we mobilized a bunch of equipment and were able to stay on top of that and avoid the spill. But this is what we're going to find today. We are going to do some TV inspections of the upstream sewer equipment system. This is in the Green Acres area, which is basically Winchester and 79 or 74. So that's just something to look at right now. We also have some high flows at a follow-up station. Pumps are ready. Pumps are not pumping low rate, but they're trying to pump right in the morning with the impellers and the pump station. Again, we stay on top of that, and we're investigating to see if there's anything we can do to shore that up. We built, coincidentally, we're replacing those pumps prior to this next year from the center.
Is part of that the constraint of the size of the pump, of the pipes that was put in under an old federal grant? No, the one in the...
It appears to be infiltration related. So
oh, okay.
Manhole had been put back on by the time we got there. That's not uncommon. But that was why we had such tremendous I&I at that station.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. All right. With that, we'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 4A through 4R. Unless there's any that need to be pulled.
Mr. President, I need to recuse myself from item P, the Woodside matters, potential litigation in Alabama. So I would make a motion to approve all but that one.
I will second the motion to approve all but item P.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We need a roll call.
Please.
Roll
call.
Okay.
Director Feldman?
Aye.
Director Pauling?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Okay, it's motion passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. With that, we'll accept a motion and a second for item P.
And note that Director Corona's left
the
dais.
Note that Director Corona's left the dais.
I'll make a motion to accept item P.
Director Slauson, would you like to second?
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor? Roll call, please.
We'll get you back.
Yeah.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauling?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Motion passes 3-0 with Director Record absent and Director Corona away from the dais. With that, we'll go to agenda item 5. Which is the action calendar. 5A is to approve and authorize an award of contract with SCW Contracting Corporation for $491,655 under specification number 1384W, the Paris Water Filtration Plant Reject Recovery Facility Settling Channel Project, and additional appropriation of $766,920.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you for having me today. I'm happy to present our settling channel project. By way of background, the Paris Water Filtration Plant treats up to 24 million gallons per day utilizing ultrafiltration. This is the process known as xenon Z-weed that we have at the plant that is now currently owned and operated, the actual membrane manufacturing process owned and operated by Suez. And in the recent past, we've completed construction of a reject recovery facility, which is a side stream treatment plant that treats the reject off the main facility. This will provide us additional water supply and help offload that reject that normally went to the sewer. After commissioning of the facility, we had some performance issues with the membrane process, and soon after we advanced an investigation into that decline, and we found abrasive damage due to concentrated sand and shell fragments, particles in the process. The photograph on the right shows the fire investigation that ensued, and shows actual holes in our membranes that is an issue for membrane integrity. So thereafter, we moved into the design process and developed alternatives to evaluate a variety of screening technologies. And at the end of that process, we recommended a settling channel. So with that, this particular project overview slide illustrates the main treatment facility, which is the blue boxes on the top. The main treatment facility rejects water to the reject recovery via the yellow lines. You'll see the reject recovery in light blue. And the red box illustrates really where we're situating the proposed settling channel to protect the downstream membranes of those fragments. By way of configuration, the Paris Water Filtration Plant is located in the city of Paris off of Evans and Old Evans Road. The site is laid out where the main treatment facility is on the east side and the reject recovery is on the west. We'll be situating the proposed settling channel on the south side of the reject recovery facility itself. This is a plan of the proposed work that we were looking to do. We're going to be constructing a settling channel adjacent to the equalization tank with common concrete wall construction. And this is a photograph with a 3D illustration of what that channel looks like. Again, we'll be forming walls to put in a physical settling channel that will settle out these materials ahead of the membrane process and settle the materials out by gravity. So in early February, we received bids under Spec 1384, and SCW Contracting Corp. Contractor we're used to working with submitted the lowest responsive and responsible bid in the amount of approximately $492,000. The second lowest bid was in close proximity to this bid. We felt the contractors did see the project similarly. This was slightly above the engineer's estimate at $450,000. We believe the increase is due to demand and skilled labor in the market today. So with that, we look to advance the project as soon as possible and complete by the end of the year. And this is a photograph of the treatment plant and the reject recovery looking from the north to south. So with that, I recommend we advance a construction contract with SCW Contracting, and that was approximately $492,000. Also other ancillary contracts to complete the construction project. An additional appropriation amount of approximately $767,000, taking the total project cost to just under $9. With that, are there any questions?
Do you have any questions of staff? If not, we'll entertain a motion in a second.
I'll move the item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Cronin?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
It's been approved 4-0 with director record absent. Thank you, Greg. We'll go to agenda item 4B or 5B, which is approve and authorize amendment to the agreement with Black and Veatch Corporation for $43,500 for the brine concentration demonstration project and an additional appropriation of $492,776. Greg.
Thank you. The next projects are brine concentration demo. By way of background, we're looking at situating a brine concentration demo at the existing desalter complex where we have existing desalters rated at 8 million gallons per day. Paris 2 is underway, so the condition of Paris 2 will be an additional 5.4 million gallons per day, a total of about 13.5. This will produce about 4 million gallons per day of brine, which we dispose of in the inland impart brine line via Sava. So with that, the objectives of the brine concentration demo is to reduce brine disposal costs, provide an additional water supply, as well as position ourselves for a future brine management facility or future full-scale implementation. We advanced demonstration project using CCRO, or closed circuit reverse osmosis process technology, via Desalitech. And we utilize their basic reflex demonstration unit, which is shown here on the right. It's a hydraulic skid with pump stings, et cetera, and then thoracic membranes to treat the water. The progress to date is we've completed a year's worth of challenge testing over a wide range of recoveries, and we've demonstrated stable operation at overall 90% recovery. With that, we had to utilize the addition of acid to maintain that recovery. In addition, we were able to come up with a brine management strategy for the supersaturated brine that is resultant in our discharge or disposed. This helps avoid additional well damage. And we also were able to establish design criteria for full-scale implementation in the future. The photograph on the bottom of the slide illustrates the layout of the demonstration unit. So what did we learn? We learned that we could increase recovery if scale is controlled. We control that with conditioning chemicals, such as sulfuric acid and specific anti-scalants targeted for this process. Also, we can do that by permeate flushes or flushing out the membranes. We also confirmed that the permeate quality from the process meets our water quality requirements, finished water quality requirements. And going forward, the Desalitech Max unit, which is a more robust system, is probably a better fit for full-scale implementation. It's better hydraulically, it provides greater flexibility, and its life cycle cost will be more favorable. It will also provide less cleaning, less conditioning chemicals, and a longer membrane life. We did also confirm that the cleaning chemicals that are needed are costly, proprietary, but are needed to recover membrane performance. In addition, our preferred option for downstream brine stabilization is to further utilize acid to ensure stable brine flows and to ensure nothing plays out in the pipelines downstream without an additional O&M, and to avoid additional capital O&M for additional processes. So the demonstration testing project going forward would like to advance the phase two effort to continue to evaluate the brine stability, to further refine costs, both capital and operational, as well as exchange our demonstration unit. We'd like to exchange the basic reflux unit with the MAX unit and do a demonstration process for that. Desalitech is going to allow us to swap those out. And right now, the reflux unit that we used on this particular demo is being used at Central Center Regional Plant for the PWR project. But we will like to advance the phase two demo testing. The objectives of their testing are to continue to look at CCRO feed and brine disposal acid addition and conditioning chemicals. Also, look at opportunities to increase overall recovery, lower equipment cost, and reduce facility footprint, and establish a baseline data set for the future design of the full scale implementation. The diagram on the right shows a pie chart of what the full annual operating costs would be based on the phase one testing. As you can see, from the green, blue, and yellow, the conditioning chemicals are a large part of the cost going forward. So as far as schedule, we've completed the phase one testing. We've decommissioned the unit, moved the unit over to San Jacinto. That demonstration system should be underway here soon and complete sometime in September. At that time, we should have the procurement process underway, fabrication and delivery to occur by October. We'll condition the MAX unit by end of year, and then advance our phase two testing period through July of 2021. This particular project is grant funded. There's two sources, DWR and the Bureau. We received just under $2 million in grant funding. Both agencies require 50% local match. So this project provides a lot of benefits. It will help us position for future full-scale implementation. will recover additional water supply in the area, as well as offset future grant disposal costs and leverage current grant funding as well as future grant funding opportunities. So with that, I'd like to recommend we advance a contract with Solitech in amount of $45,000 to advance the exchange of the demonstration unit. Also, an amendment with Black & Veatch for the Phase 2 testing in amount of approximately $44,000. Administrative award of other ancillary contracts to complete the demonstration process and then additional appropriation of just under $500,000. So with that, are there any questions?
Do you have any questions? I just wanted to add that, you know, it's things like this that make this district outstanding, you know, after being in Washington, D.C. last year, and we had an opportunity to brief the minority side of the Senate Energy and Power Subcommittee, and she was absolutely amazed at what this district does. And this is just one of the things that was pointed out. And I must say that Paul does an absolutely excellent job in bringing these people up to date and keeping them apprised of what we're doing. It makes us look head and shoulders above most everybody else that comes back to D.C. And so this is just one of the things that makes us stand out. Thank you, Greg.
Just to add... And Greg, you mentioned one of the things we want to do is be ready for available grant funding. And one of the key initiatives we're working on in Washington, D.C. is funding through the Corps of Engineers for the next phase of our desalination program. This brine recovery system would be a big portion of that. Right now, we have a $25 million federal authorization for the Paris North project under the Section 219 Corps of Engineers Environmental Infrastructure Program. We've received about $20.3 million to date. We have some additional projects. We're hoping to get that appropriation finished out, or that authorization finished out through an appropriation next year. But at the same time, we're seeking a what's called a modification to our 219 authorization. There is in Congress moving a Water Resources Development Act bill this year. That Water Resources Development Act, or WRDA, deals with Corps of Engineers issues. We have received broad support not only from the Corps, but also from our legislative delegation to, and in fact have made it into the Corps Chief's report for this modification, which would give us another $25 million to work from the Corps. The benefit of that program is they pay 75% of capital costs. So it's a very significant contribution, let's say, relative to the Bureau's programs for Title 16, which only paid 25%. So it's a 75% contribution. So we feel between this research that we're doing, advancing this project, what we're doing currently on the desalters, that we're going to be in good shape to position ourselves to be able to get the modification.
Any questions?
I'll move staff's recommendation.
And I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
It's been moved 4-0 with Director Record absent. We'll go to Agenda Item 5C, which is approve and authorize an award of construction contract with E.J. Meyer Company for $1,717,777 under specification number 13855W on I-215 Placentia Avenue Interchange Water and Sewer Facilities Relocation, and additional appropriation of $2,398,800. Corey.
Sullivan, members of the board. This project is an example of how NWE partners with local jurisdictions in order to best facilitate utility relocation coordinated with the project. By way of background, this interchange improvement is being performed by Riverside County Transportation Commission. It requires relocation of certain ENW water and sewer facilities that are in conflict, as shown by the exhibits in the staff report. Approximately 700 Linden Butte water pipeline to be removed and replaced due to ground surface changes over the pipelines. Approximately 2,750 feet of sewer pipelines that need to be relocated because the manholes are within the footprint of this new interchange, and Caltrans did not allow for that. EMWD agreed to lead and administer these facility relocations in conjunction with the interchange improvements by RCTC. Since EMWD enjoys significant prior rights status, meaning the net easements, RCTC will reimburse over 95% of EMWD's relocation costs. The exception is a small portion of the 24-inch water line that we don't have. On February 5th of 2020, the district received 9 bids under specification 1385SW. The apparent low bidder of Mamco Incorporated was deemed non-responsive and subsequently withdrew the bid. The second low bidder, E.J. Meyer Company, was deemed responsive and is the basis of the recommended award of construction. Their bid was approximately $8,000 higher, so pretty close. The total project costs are estimated at approximately $2.6 million. The reimbursement by RCTC to EMWD is estimated at about $2.5 million, so our costs are estimated at just over $100,000. The recommended action is the execution by the general manager of the district standard form contract with the lowest responsive bidder in the amount of $517,777. And in the staff report, it said to reject the lowest non-responsive bidder, but I think that's not necessary at this point because they withdrew their bid. Also, the administrative award and execution of standard forms and contracts with necessary consultants for construction services, and additional appropriation in the amount of $2,398,800, bringing the total estimated project to $2,587,000.
Do you have any questions of Corey?
Just a quick question, Corey. We are going to oversee the project, not RCTC. Is that correct?
That's correct. Okay. We are in the lead.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that.
Okay.
With that, I'll make a motion.
I'll say.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Okay. Motion passes 4-0 with director record absent. Go to agenda item 5D, which is approve and authorize and award a contract with Engineering Resources of Southern California Incorporated for $559,840 for the Quail Valley Subarea 4 Sewerage Feasibility Study and Sewer System Backbone Preliminary Design Project and appropriation of $843,980. Eric.
Good morning.
Morning.
Quail Valley is a disadvantaged community within the city of Mesquite, located north of Canyon Lake. The diagram on the right shows the boundary of the community as well as the 9 subareas that we have identified. Subareas 4 and 9 were deemed to be priority areas within the Quail Valley community. And last year, we successfully completed the Subarea 9 Phase 1 project. And today, we are presenting a request to move forward on a feasibility study for Subarea 4, as well as extending a backbone to the Subarea 4 from Subarea 9 last year. Over the years, we've worked with several agencies. I want to recognize 4 of them today: State Water Resource Control Board, Santa Ana Water Project Authority, the City of Menifee, and also the Regional Board for Santa Ana. Those 4 agencies each contribute to the Subarea 9 Phase 1 project, and the district is confident that we now qualify for additional funding to assist with Subarea 4 from both SAMHSA and State Water Resource Control. Subarea 4 represents unique challenges with regards to implementing this project. The lot density is pretty high in this area, as well as the topography is very varying, requiring that if you took a conventional approach of a gravity sewer, you'd have to have very deep sewers and be very difficult to install this type of system within this community. We, under this feasibility study, we will be looking at project alternatives that would result in shallower excavation and potentially lower cost implementation. But because they are non-conventional, we also want to look at the operating and maintenance burdens that would occur going forward. We want to be sure we make the right decision for the district in terms of the alternatives for providing a solution to Sub-Area 4. Independent of the feasibility study, we also intend to advance backbone sewer that was constructed under Sub-Area 9 to the Sub-Area 4. This project would provide a preliminary design for that backbone sewer. As I mentioned before, we're confident that we can obtain grants within this calendar year from both Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority in the amount of $200,000 and the State Water Resource Control Board in the amount of $500,000. The regional board also has some funds that may be potentially available to provide additional funding that they occur. We did a competitive process for identifying a consultant to propose today. Back in November, we issued an RFP to 8 consultants. In January, we received 2 proposals, and we had a committee consisting of operations and engineering perform a detailed review of these proposals, looking at the proposal contents for its project understanding, relevant experience, capacity and ability of the firm, as well as past experience and performance. As this consultant selection matrix identifies, Engineering Resources of Southern California and Woodward and Kern were both proposed. And the selection committee result was that both these firms were fairly equally good in their proposals. Engineering Resources of Southern California had a slightly more detailed approach and understanding for this project. And as a result, they were rated slightly superior to Woodward and Kern. Engineering Resources Consulting also had the lower price proposal in the amount of $559,000. The consultant's proposal includes a draft and final feasibility study, as well as a preliminary design for the backbone sewer along Yes Road, as well as project management, quality assurance, and quality control. The proposed schedule for the project, obviously we're asking for a board consideration of this project today to advance it, hopefully this month. We intend to have the feasibility study completed by November of this year, but future steps would be dependent on future grant funds becoming available. The recommendation, award of a contract, engineering services contract, engineering resources of Southern California in the amount of $559,840. Admin award of contracts necessary to complete the feasibility study, as well as the preliminary design of the backbone sewer, and an appropriation in the amount of $843,980. If there's any questions at this time?
Do you have any questions of staff?
I could add there.
Sure.
On March 5th, we did host a tour for top staff, as well as part of our staff. We toured Quail Valley and shared with them our plans to advance to separate, given that they'll be part of the funding decision.
Super. Okay. Motion.
Let Dave make the motion. Sitting back there watching reruns of Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, of course.
Is that a motion?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I'll second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan.
Aye.
Director Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Sullivan. Sorry.
Aye.
Okay. Motion approves 4-0 with director record absent. We'll go to 5E, which is approve and authorize an award of agreements with Woodward and Kern for $232,234 and Dudek for $69,480 for the Lakeview Subbasin Groundwater Banking and Conjunctive Use Feasibility Study Phase 2, and an additional appropriation of $494,500. Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is John Dameron.
Hi, John.
Geologist for the district. I'm here to talk to you about the Lakeview Groundwater Banking and Conjunctive Use Program. Short agenda.
Please
advance the slide.
Sorry? Right click.
Right click the mouse. Thank you. Sorry, I've been up here for 10 years.
That's okay. We're glad to see you up here.
Thank you. So I have a quick agenda here. We'll give you an overview, a program concept, discussion, feasibility study, part phase two, and recommendations. The project is located in the Lakeview Sub-Basin. Lakeview Sub-Basin, I have the mouse. There it is. We have a number of pipelines going through the area. We have the Colorado River aqueduct system there, the Lakeview Pipeline, and the inland feeder coming down. And we'll see later on that we have EM5 connection right here. We have two blue areas on this map, one to the west and one to the east. Those are potential recharge sites for us. And so we're going to be focused on those two sites. This is the same area. The overlying agency that we have out here is the Wiggle Water Company. Their sphere of influence is in brown here. So I want to make sure that we're all aware of that. They have a single well pumping at this point. That's the Wiggle 6 located here. These green lines that you see on there with the little black dots, the black dots are actual diameters of those master plan pipelines for the district. So we have two locations that we're looking at for recharge, the west facility and the east facility. The west facility is privately owned property with a number of property owners. And we'll take a quick look at that in the next slide. And the East facility, I'm sorry for my mouse. The East facility is owned by Riverside County Flood Control and Water Conservation District. We have a few blue dots along the map here. Those would be our extraction wells, our production wells. So we put water in and take water out as a conjunctive use program. So, zooming in on the two sites, the west site first, on the left-hand side, has red and blue colors on it, and a photograph looking towards Paris Lake. Below, the field is an open field at this time that has housing on the far side. It's photos a little bit enlarged so that we can see the houses on the far side of the field. The photo on the right is the flood control area. Nice open field. The only neighbor there is an elementary school. And it's meant to help water, hold water. So it's helping us out for our purposes. The estimated recharge capacity of the potential site. The east site is looking at about 10,000 acre feet a year. The west site is potentially between 10 and 15,000 acre feet a year. And they'd be run on a conjunctive use operation. It's important to point out that only one of the two sites would be used. They're mutually exclusive. If one works, the other one won't, and vice versa, because of the hydrogeology in the area. So in our first cut, it was a feasibility study to make sure that we had a project that was reasonable out here. And so the recommendation at the end of the phase one feasibility study was to move forward to a phase two feasibility study. Phase one was conducted by Woodard and Kern Plus. And for phase two, we're recommending that we evaluate the for the potential of stormwater capture in the area, since the east site has that potential. The construction feasibility on either of the two sites, looking at the total amount of recharge that we can get by going out and doing some drilling at the site, some field work, ending up with a preferred recharge site, and the production capacity of the wells needs to be identified as well. Finally, we are going to be doing some field work with your permission, and identify potential partners for the project, such as Riverside County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and potential funding sources. This work would be broken up between two different companies for the most part. Woodard and Curran would be doing most of the office study work. So assessing these different properties that we've discussed, the recharge potential, capture, stormwater, and outreach to the stakeholders. DUDEC would be overseeing the field work. Both of these companies are on annual services, and so that's how we came to have them up on the recommendation for joint contracts with them. DUDEC would be required to obtain the permits for us to get out there, drill, make sure that everything's under proper supervision and log a well. And the district staff would be going out and contracting the driller directly. So our own staff would be pulling some of the burden also. The costs for each of the contracts, the Woodard and Curran, is $232,234. DUDEC is at $69,480. Field activities we're estimating at $66,900. Labor contingencies were at $125,886 for a total project cost at $494,500. So at this time, we're requesting that the board advance a contract with Woodard and Curran in the amount of $232,234, a contract with DUDEC for $69,480, and administrative award for execution of the ancillary contracts to do the field work in the area. We anticipate this project take about 10 to 12 months, so we'll be back to the board December, January time frame with results and further recommendations. So with that, are there any questions?
Is this part of Starco?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Oh, all right. I do have a couple of comments. This is a very exciting project. There's great potential here. For storing, as we said, up to 10,000 acre feet per year of water. We have regional met infrastructure and a turnout that's proximate to this area, the groundwater basin. We feel it would be very compatible with what we're doing in the desalters to the west of there. And, of course, groundwater conjunctive use is the most cost-effective means of storing water. So that combined with the fact that one of the sites is owned by the Riverside County Flood Control, and we will be noting Water Conservation District.
They have it in the name.
And there is so additional potential opportunity to capture and recharge stormwater. We think there's could be some exciting opportunities here, so we would really recommend pursuing this. And we did review this with the Planning Committee. I think there was good support to at least take this next step.
Okay. Any other questions, staff?
I'll make a motion to approve the item.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Director Sullivan?
Aye.
Director Pauling?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes 4-0 with Director Record absent. With that, we'll go to agenda item 6, which... Sure, we'll take a break. We all need a little...